Okay, so let's start. The Midrash Rabbah in Shemos, Parsha Yudches, Simin Vav. Vayishma Yisro heard. Hadahu Dichsiv, the Pasuk in Mishle, Perkites, Leitz Take Ufesi Ya'arim. The Leitz will be struck, and the Pethi, the one who is foolish will eventually become wise, will become smart. V'chein Omer, it similarly says later on in Mishlei Perek Chaf Aleph, Ba'anash Leitz Yechkam Pesi, when the punishment befalls the Leitz, so the Pethi, the fool, will become wise. He will take note of the punishment that the Leitz receives and he will become wise. Amalek v'Yisro hayu be'etza im Paro. Amalek and Yisro together were advisors of Paro, referring specifically to how they were going to deal with the Hebrew problem. You know, both of them were part of this council, were part of this advisory board. Kishara Yisro she'ibed HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Amalek min ha'olam. When Yisro observed Amalek being removed from the world, meaning at the end of Parshas Shalach, the previous Parsha, min ha'olam haba, and he was also punished spiritually, that he had no access to the dimension called Olam Haba, the world achieving its state of perfection. Tohe va'asa tshuva. He saw this, and the shock of the experience caused Yisro to do tshuva. Shechen ksiv, ki macho emche zecher Amalek. The final verse of the previous parsha is the God swearing that he will vanquish Amalek. Va'achar kach va'yishma Yisro. And immediately afterwards, meaning in the beginning of the following parsha, is Yisro heard. This is what he heard. Amalek is called the Leitz. This he embodies this characteristic called the Leitz. Very often we translate this terminology, this term, to be someone who practices frivolous behavior, someone who isn't serious, is a jokester, right? And right in modern Hebrew you have Leitzan. Leitzan is a clown, you know? But as we will see, the Leitz is something much more sinister. Far from being a clown, we'll see, maybe we'll, if we have an opportunity, we'll touch on why it has that connotation, which makes it even more sinister. But the theme of a Leitz is someone who approaches the Metzius with a very specific perspective. And his whole interest is to undermine and uproot any significance of anything that he is confronted with, to undermine its existential importance. The first parak of Tehillim, David HaMelech starts off with, right? The Moshav Leitzim, Lo Yashav, that he does not sit with the Leitzim. Again, this is not an imperative to say that a person shouldn't hang around with people who make fun of things necessarily. But this is referring to these types of people, people who sit around and engage in leitzanut. We find, for example, in the Medrash Rabbah on last week's parsha, in Parshas Pekudei, in the very beginning of Medrash Rabbah and Parshas Pekudei, Hayu leitzanei hador toanim, the leitzanim of that generation, and in the generation of the Midbar, said, Heach Yishra Shechina al Mishkan shel Ben Amram. How is the Shechina going to rest on this physical structure that Ben Amram, i.e. Moshe Rabbeinu, constructed? There's no way that there can be any supernatural effect of putting together this, you know, this little science project of wood and tapestry and all these intricate things. How is that going to do anything? Yeah? That's the Leitzan. The Leitz, he approaches reality with this very, very deep pessimism. And it's a pessimism that doesn't just come from doubting or not being sure or, you know, weighing the chances, weighing the risks. That's something that, like, obviously every normal human being has to have that element to be, right, to question, to think critically. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an initiative to undermine and bring down any potential for significance. I want to examine a little bit about the history of this character called Amalek. Because what we know about this person directly from the Kisvei HaKodesh is very limited. And the hints that we have in the psukim reveal something incredible about the personality of this person. And as we're approaching now the parsha of Zachor, which Chazal were metaking to read before Purim, right? This is a very, very old takana. Okay, it's a takana of Ezra to read these four parshios in a specific order. Most of the time, they're not read in consecutive order, meaning they're not read, 4 weeks in a row. Usually we skip a week, right? We skipped last week. There wasn't a parsha, right? 2 weeks ago was Shkalim. This past Shabbos was nothing. And now we're going to have Zachor, which is the Shabbos before Purim. The idea of reading a parsha on a certain Shabbos, a specific themed parsha, is that the week that we're going into, that's the avoda for that week. The avoda for that week is X. So Shkalim, it's a time to bring Shkalim, right? Because Adar, right, is the end of the year, and people have to prepare their Shkalim in order to bring, to fund the Beis HaMikdash for the coming year, right? As we know, the Karbonos can't be, right, you can't bring the Karbonos for the new year from the old funds. There has to be new funds that come in. So everyone has to bring on time, or else the Mikdash can't function. Right, the same thing with Para. Right, the Para is the initiative that everyone should become Tahor because we're gonna, right, because Pesach is coming, and then indeed Chodesh, which is talking about the coming of the Geula, the coming of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, before Yetzias Mitzrayim comes. So similarly with Zachor, the avoda of the week of Purim is the avoda of understanding our confrontation, our perpetual struggle with this character and this force called Amalek, and to understand what exactly occurred with this individual. So there's many places where we can start from, but let's see if we can start somewhere. Chaf Gimel. Hold on. This isn't the Seder of the there's no simon Chaf Gimel. In the Midrash Tanchuma in Parshas Vayishlach Siman Gimel. Ubishvil ma zacha Eliphaz ben Esav, shetishra olav ruach hakodesh, that he should merit prophecy. Eliphaz ben Esav merited prophecy, as we say in the pasuk in Iyav, Eliphaz hatemoni. Eliphaz, right, one of the friends, right, there's Eliphaz, there's Sofar, right, all the Chevra of Eov, okay, the Eliphaz character in Eov is Eliphaz, the son of Esav, okay? Shekein Ksiv, it says in the Pasuk in Koheles, right, Tov Lelechas Lebeis Ha'ovel, Lelechas Lebeis HaMishta. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of the Mishta. Which Mishta are we talking about? The Midrash goes on to explain that the Mishta of Avraham that he made for Yitzchak, when Yitzchak was born, right? It says that Avram, right, saw Mishteh Gadol b'yom higamel es Yitzchak, on the day that Yitzchak was weaned. So he says, who are the people that, why was it called Mishteh Gadol? Because he invited Shem and Aver and Avimelech to this party. So the biggest characters around came to this party that he had. Who wasn't there? Okay? The person who wasn't there was Eliphaz. He was also invited. And why wasn't Eliphaz there? Because he went to Beis Ha'evel. Which Beis Ha'evel? To Eov. He went to Eov to be Menachem him, to console him for the loss of literally his entire family died. Yeah? And is it what?
Eliphaz is alive?
So again, without going into the complexities of Sefer Eov, there's a Shita Bechlal in the Gemara and Baba Basra, which I think we discussed before, that the whole story is a parable, right? And even according to the Manda Amrim that say that it isn't a parable, right, but it actually happened, there's a very big discussion as to when it happens in history, whether it's in the door of Moshe Rabbeinu or earlier on. This is the Midrash that according to this Midrash, this, right, the story of Eov takes place during the generation of Avram. Right? But what we're saying is that Eliphaz was a prophet. And why did he merit to have this prophecy? Right? Because he decided to be mischaber, right? He decided to, yeah? Excuse me. Yeah, he excuse me. That he decided to be mischaber to Avram Avinu, yeah, to be, you know, to be friends with him, yeah, in order to, you know, yeah. So Eliphaz merits this prophecy, okay, in order to You see that Eliphaz is not a Stam character. We have the Talmud de Elio here somewhere. No. This is Talmud de Elio in Perek Chaf Dalet. Okay. There's Talmud de Elio in Perek Chaf Dalet. Says the Talmud de Elio. Oh wow, they have the Ramas that's open over here. Omer Eliphaz libeno Amalek. Eliphaz says to his son Amalek. Mutav shetiye chofer boros li Yisrael. It is better that you go and you dig ditches for the Jewish people. Meshetiye melech la'atzmacha, that you should be a king for yourself. That was Eliphaz's parting message to his son Amalek. He says, listen, you know, the Jewish people were chosen by God, and, you know, we have to, you know, accept that, and it could be disappointing for you. I know that you're an ambitious person. But listen, in the end of the day, it's better that you become completely subservient to the Jewish people and you give up all of your aspirations and hopes for the rest of your life. that was the message of Eliphaz to his son.
Son Amalek, right?
His son Amalek. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, right? The last source that I wanted to bring in terms of the origins of Amalek. Says the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says on Daf Tzadi Tes Amud Beis. The Gemara brings the pasuk from Bereishis Lamed Vav, the Achos Lotan Timna, that the sister of Lotan was Timna. Who is Lotan? So Lotan was one of the Alufim, as that same parak of Bereishis in Parak Lamed Vav says. Aluf Lotan, Aluf Se'es, right? All the chieftains of that area. Right, of Seir, that the family of Esav comes to rule, Lotan was one of the chieftains. And Lotan, right, and Timna, rather, is the sister of this chieftain. Okay? The Timna, says the pasuk continues, the Timna haisa pilegesh le'Eliphaz ben Esav. Timna became the concubine of Esav. Says the Gemara, Timna bas melachim haisa. She was the daughter of royalty, as we see explicitly in the verses, right? Lotan is this king, and so if Timna is the sister of Lotan, that means she's part of the royal family as well, right? V'ratza lihischaber la'Avraham Avinu uleYitzchak uleYisgayer. She attempted to go and be Misgayer, to come and be part of the Jewish people, like whatever that meant back then, yeah? And she was rejected. She wasn't allowed to become part of the people, right? Kevan Shirachka, Yatsa Mimena Amalek. Because she was rejected, so she said, the Lashon of the Gemara was there, Mutav she'eschaber lezera Avraham kepilegesh. It's better that I go and try to even if I have to be a concubine, not even a full-fledged wife, I could be somehow connected to the children of Avraham. That's ideal, which indeed she did. And her son grows up to be Amalek. To read this, I just want to read this Maharal in the Gemara that we just quoted. Nira ki Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov lo kiblu l'timna. Shebipnei chashivos u'malchus timna lo tia nechneses begeros ka'asher roi. They feared, what was the fear? That because she comes from royalty, she wouldn't be able to integrate into the Jewish people appropriately. There has to be complete, you know, full intention to join with the Jewish people. They lived very, you know, simple lives. They were destitute. I think we've spoken about in the Chabura about how the Avos, they lived lifestyles as nomadic wanderers, right? They lived in tents. Yeah? Huh?
They did have lots of money, though.
They did have lots of money, that's true. But they didn't. They certainly didn't establish themselves as a kingdom or a monarchy or anything like that, right? they were concerned that Timna wasn't really joining for the right reasons. That was their concern. Yeah? Lo kiblua. Ben Israch ka Yosef. And this is why Timna became distant more than any other person. He called davar shenidcha legamrei v'iyev shashiyeh yotzei Amalek shekol kach hayasone v'oyev liYisrael. It was not possible for someone like Amalek, who is the antithesis, or the arch nemesis of the Jewish people, asher kol anivrem tfeilim elem, v'iyev shashiyeh uma achas mezagel Yisrael kamo shehaya Amalek. It's not possible for any other nation to go to oppose the Jewish people like Amalek. Lekach beru ki adchiyah hazos me'avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov haysam. Meaning, this wasn't a dechia, you know, because, like, later on in history, you know, the person tried to join the Jewish people when they were already formed and they were already going, they were already established themselves as a nation. This was a dechia from the source, meaning from the avos. The avos themselves rejected her. Right? If you have, you know, a bad experience with some, you know, with some rabbi that you meet on the street, okay, fine, so you can't, right, it doesn't... But you don't vilify the whole people necessarily because of that one experience. But if the avos themselves rejected you, that means that the whole Jewish project has rejected you. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov rejected you. Right? And that's taken very, very hard. And as we know, right, as the Gemara tells us, Timna goes and she marries Eliphaz. Amalek bears that bitterness of the rejection, right, that Timna experienced. Yeah? There's a very deep idea here in the secret of the power of Amalek, says the Maharal. Because he was distanced from the very start, as we explained. If no one from his family, meaning his mother, had not attempted to join the Jewish people, there wouldn't be that distance between Amalek and the Jewish people. That fact that she came, Timna came and tried to join the Jewish people, v'nidcha, and she was pushed away. He tachlis harachaka. That is the epitome of distancing. V'havin zem ma'od. Understand this deeply. Just think about the pattern of events over here. Like, Eliphaz grows up in the house of Esav, okay? He's taught by his father to despise Yaakov. As we know from Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, yeah? So Eliphaz is sent out to go kill Yaakov, yeah? This is Rashi on the initial meeting between Yaakov and Rachel, that he cries, and one of the explanations why he cries is because he comes empty-handed. He says, my father, sent Eliezer with camels laden with gold and riches, etc., and I come with nothing, right? Why did he come with nothing? Because Eliphaz is sent by his father Esav to go kill Yaakov, right? And when he comes to confront him, he says, I can't do it. I can't go through with it. And he asks Yaakov, he says, listen, my father told me to kill you. Like, what am I supposed to do? So Yaakov says, listen, just take my money. The ani nechshav kemes, and a poor person is like, he's dead. Yeah, so it's like you kind of fulfilled your father's orders. Yeah? But Eliphaz, he lives with an appreciation for what the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov project is. The Yalkut Shimoni, in the beginning of Ovadia, beginning of Sefer Ovadia, the Yalkut Shimoni says that Eliphaz merited that from him would come a prophet that would be part of the Kisvei HaKodesh. Who is that prophet? This is not a trick question. Who is the prophet that comes from Eliphaz?
Ovadia.
Ovadia from Edom, the Ger from Edom. He says, you recognized the greatness of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and what they were trying to bring into the world. Yeah, I will bring from you a prophet that will speak about the culmination of that project. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus will be fulfilled. That comes from the power of Elisan. Excuse me. Of Eliphaz. The fact that he was able to have that recognition. Yeah? But what was the problem? Eliphaz gives over this recognition, right? This he deeply understands that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are bringing something into the world that's important. But he gives this over to his son Amalek in the way of, like, you know, there's nothing that we can do other than just to be completely subservient to this. There's nothing that we can, right? There's no active role that we can play in this. We just have to be mashpil ourselves to the Avos project. And that's what he tells his son. He says, listen, you know, just like mop the floors for them. That's what you can do. You can understand, like, the animosity that's building in Amalek First of all, he's not even, you know, one of the sons. There's another source that I chose not to bring Baal Peh, but you can quote this, the Ramban in Bereishis, in Perek Lamed Vav, says that we see that Amalek is not one of the sons of Esav, since he's the son of a Pilegesh, he's the son of a concubine. Yeah? So, Lo Yashav B'Seir Yachad Im Shar Echav, says the Ramban. Right? He didn't sit in Seir, in the main, you know, base of the Esav family, with all of his other five brothers. He was kind of like, he was a reject, essentially. Right? So he's, first off, he's a reject. Second off, his father is telling him that, you know, he should throw away all of his aspirations in life in order to just be part of Klal Yisrael. His mother has the story about trying to join Klal Yisrael, and she's rejected. So Amalek lives with this deep, deep resentment and animosity of Klal Yisrael. Which, by the way, just to emphasize, if this wasn't clear already, the point of the Gemara in Sanhedrin is to criticize the Avos for distancing Timna too much. Right? You see that what resulted from pushing her away. This is the hatred that is festering in the soul of, right, the tortured soul of Amalek. And he becomes to embody this characteristic called the Lates. The Lates, the scoffer. In the Megillah, in Perek He of the Megillah. So Esther confronts Achashverosh and asks him to come to a party and says, yeah, you and Haman should come to this party and I want to share something with you. So Achashverosh says, call Haman, get him ready. And Haman receives the invitation and he goes home to his wife. And on the way home, he passes Mordechai, who is at that time in, you know, sackcloth and ashes, you know, mourning the coming destruction that he thinks is going to happen, that he knows about, yeah? And he says, he comes home, and he, right, by Yisaper lo'ava lo'zer shisto, es rov oshro verov banav. He tells him about all of his wealth, and all of his children, and everything that he has for him, right? Ba'af lo hizmina Esther, and Esther, the queen, right? Even Esther likes me, right? She didn't invite anyone to this party except me, Ki'imosi. Yeah? And after he goes on this whole long list about why he's so good and why he's on top of the world and why everyone should love him and like him, right, he says, V'chol zeh, einenu shoveli. Einenu shoveli, none of this is worth anything to me. V'chol eis asher ani roez Mordechai Yehudi yoshev b'shar ha-melech. The moment that I see Mordechai, I see him, and my whole, all of my accomplishments and all of my greatness collapses immediately. Immediately. Yeah. This is how the corrupted soul of the Lates develops. Right? The Lates he's rejected, he's put down, he's told that he can't have any of his own aspirations, he has nothing to look forward to. Yeah, and that rejection festers in his consciousness, in his soul, until he looks at the entire world, projects that reality onto the entire world. The Jewish people, as such, Klal Yisrael, the project of the Avos and Klal Yisrael, embody the very antithesis of Esav. It's the very antithesis of Leitzanut. The Gemara in Megillah says, "Kol Leitzanusa Asira." All forms of leitzanut are forbidden. They're forbidden. Levar mi leitzanusa da avodah zara. Except for leitzanut regarding idolatry. Meaning, the approach to reality called leitzanut, of scoffing, of undermining, of wanting to negate any significance or any value of anything in the world, that is completely forbidden. The only place where that could be applied is avodah zara. Why? Because indeed, that is the proper perspective towards avodah zarah, right? The assertion that there is no unified force guiding reality, and there is no seder, there's no underlying structure to the cosmos, and everything is just, you know, willy nilly, and everything, right? It's just combating forces that are kind of duking it out in the world. That perspective, that worldview, the proper perspective towards that is in fact leitzanut, is in fact, right, to scoff and to undermine it. But everything else, leitzanut, is completely forbidden. It's completely forbidden to approach the world with that sense of scoffing. moving up a little bit in history to when the Jewish people confront Amalek. Yeah, as we said earlier, it takes place in Parshas B'Shalach. Parshas B'Shalach has in it two what they call water crises. There's two instances where there's a lack of water, and that causes a little bit of a problem, shall we say, of complaints against Moshe Rabbeinu. The first water crisis number one, is directly after Kriyas Yamsuf. Vayisam Moshe es Yisrael, this is in Perek Nesavav of Shemos, Vayisam Moshe es Yisrael miyamsuf, Vayetzu el mibashur. Vayelchu shloshes yamim b'midbar v'lo motzu mayim. They travel for 3 days in this midbar shore, and they don't find any water. Okay? Vayavo marasa, and they finally arrive at this place called Mara, and as we know, it's called Mara because the waters are bitter, and they're not able to drink them, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs an ace, and the waters become drinkable. Okay? Chazal say in the Gemara in Baba Kama. Okay? The Gemara in Baba Kama in Daf Pei Beis is discussing the origins of takanas, of the takana of reading the Torah in public. Reading the Torah in public on Sheni, Chamishi, and Shabbos, very, very old takana. Okay? The Gemara asserts initially, that this is a takana of Ezra. Says the Gemara, what do you mean it's a takana of Ezra? Much earlier than that, right? As it says, Darshe Rishumos Hayudarshim, the people that were Doresh, the hidden, embedded, Rashum means something that's embedded, right? Just as an interesting aside, there's a whole area of cryptography called stenography. Is anyone familiar with this? Stenography? How you have a certain text or a picture, let's say, and it looks like a certain thing. It looks like a certain picture or it looks like a certain text. And in... What? No, it's not hieroglyphics. Inside the text is a hidden message. So like, for example, there'll be, you know, a text, a page of text of random words, right? Or not random words. It looks like a coherent letter. It looks like someone's, you know, writing someone an email, you know, like, how you doing? Haven't spoken for a while, type of thing. And in one of the periods, in the middle of the paragraph, inside is microtext of a whole secret message. Yeah? Why would someone do that? Because if someone feels that, you know, someone's going to intercept his message, they're going to look at it and say, oh, this is just an email, forget that. Yeah? When really, inside is embedded something completely, right? Completely disconnected. Or a picture, right? A picture that just looks like a drawing of some, you know, or a painting or something. And if you notice certain marks on the picture, right, it's alluding to certain, some hidden message, okay? Rashumos, rashum, means that it's embedded. Darshe rashumos, okay? It's embedded in the psukim. So there's the pshat, and then there's something that's embedded in the pshat. And then daf pei beis amud beis, okay? So the darshe rashumos, what would the darshe rashumos say about this? Okay? They would say, Vayelchu shlosho yamim bamidbar v'lo matzu mayim. They went for 3 days in the desert, they didn't find water. The ein mayim ela Torah. And mayim is referring to Torah. As it says in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, hoy kol samei l'chula mayim. All those who are thirsty, come and drink my water. So they were metakein to never go 3 days without a public Talmud Torah. And that's why we have Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos. You never have 3 days go straight without Talmud Torah. That was the response to this crisis. To say, oh, they're complaining? They're not really complaining because there's no water. That's not really why they're complaining. They're complaining because there's a disconnect between the people and their focus of where they're meant to go. That at root is the problem. Second crisis. Perek Yud Zayin. Very, very end of the project. Vayisu kol adas b'nei Yisrael mimid barsin, vayachanu b'rifidim, and they settle in a place called Rifidim. Vayarev ha'am im Moshe, the people start a conflict with Moshe. Vayomer tunu lanu mayim, give us water. Vayitzak Moshe el Hashem, leimor ma esel ha'am hazeh, right? Moshe turns to God and he says, what am I going to do? These people they're going to kill me because I can't give them water. And, right, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, performs for them an ace, and, right, makes sure that they have water, right, from the rock, right, this is the first emergence of the magic rock that gives them water during the desert, okay? Vayikrashim amakom masa umriva. They call this place the place of contention, the place of conflict. Al Riv B'nai Yisrael, on the war that the Jewish people waged, so to speak. Va'al Naso Sam Es Hashem Lemor, the fact that they tested God, saying, Hayesh Hashem B'kirbeinu Im Ayin, is God amongst us or not? Next pasuk. Va'yavo Amalek Va'yilachem Im Yisrael Birfidim. Birfidim. And as the Medrash says, Rashi brings, right, Birfidim Sherafu Yedehem Min HaTorah, that their hands became weak from Torah, meaning they withdrew from Torah. Not from Torah, but in matters of Torah. Meaning there's a contrast between these two crises. Crisis number one is understood, right? Crisis number one, the Darshei Rishumos, and as the, right, this is an important lesson to add from that Gemara in Baba Kama. Nevi'im Shebeinehem, right? The Nevi'im Shebeinehem, meaning the prophets amongst the Jewish people in the Midbar. They recognized what the problem was, and they immediately made the takana. They immediately made this institution that there should always be, every 3 days at minimum, there should be a public Talmud Torah. Right? That was crisis number one. The people understood what was at the root of the crisis. They understood. And they immediately made a correction. But for the water crisis number two, it was already too much. They broke. Rafu Yedeh Min HaTorah. The whole solution that they found originally, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. Rafu Yedeh Min HaTorah. And when Rafu Yedeh Min HaTorah, Vayavu Amalek. And Amalek finds a place to come in. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer in Perek Mem Dalad gives us a little bit of a deeper insight into what exactly went on in this episode of water crisis number two in Parsha Speshalach. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, Acher kol hagvuros v'hanifleos she'asah Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael b'Mitzrayim u'b'Yam Suf, after all of the miracles and wonders that God did for the Jewish people in Egypt and on the sea, chazru v'nasu Kodesh Baruch Hu od eser pa'amim, 10 times, 10 additional times. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk in Bamidbar, Parshas Shelach, v'yinasu osi ze eser pa'amim, that they tested God 10 times. Rabbi Zecharia Omer, and Rabbi Zecharia says, Neched Esav haya Amalek. Amalek was the grandson of Esav. Uve Evas Zikno ba'alehem. And he came with all of the disdain that his grandfather had, Li Paramehem, in order to avenge the people. From the people, rather. Right? To take vengeance out on the Jewish people. Besof Yom Shel Moshe, when Moshe is approaching the end of his life, much later on, 40 years later, right at the end of the Torah, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'azkir lahem, osam eser nisyonos. God wanted to remind them about the 10 times that they had tested him throughout the Midbar. He wants to remind them. Yeah? So how does he remind them? Zachor es asher asalacha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you, right? The second time that we mention Amalek, in Parshas Kitetze. Again, all the way at the end of the Torah. Asher korecha baderech. That he came upon you on the way. And you were tired and weak and without fear of God. Says the Sifri, and Rashi also brings us. Asher karacha baderech. I'm just inserting this parenthetically in our conversation with Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? Karacha baderech. Karacha lashon karus. Cold. Cold. Right? Moshe lamad avadome. Right? La ambatia mole mayim rotchem. A bathtub full of boiling water, right? The shote kofetz pnima, and there is a fool who jumps in, right? Umechave es besaro, and he burns his flesh because the water is so scalding hot, right? What does he gain from that? Ask the midrash. Like, why would you do that? So the shote says, "Well, I've cooled it off for the next guy." That's what the shote answers. That's Amalek. Amalek knows that he's going to lose. He knows. He's told by his father. He's told by his mother. These people, they're not regular people, these people. For some reason, God has invested in them. This is not just another nation. Right? He knows this deeply. He bears this incredible resentment because of that knowledge. And he goes and he decides to go wage a war against the people that are literally surrounded by supernatural clouds of glory. Right, who just split the sea and destroyed the entire Egyptian army. Why does he do that? Even though he knows he's going to lose, I'll cool off the water for the next guy. To show that, oh, you think that these people are supernatural? There's something unique about them? I'll show you. They can also suffer. I can also cause them pain. Okay, I'll lose? Okay, I'm prepared to lose. As long as I can show that these people are also susceptible. Don't think that they're so special. This is how deep the malice of the Lates goes. The Lates is prepared to literally go on a suicide mission if he's just able to show and express his point. And his point being, you think that this is so special? I'll show you, it's not really so special. Oh, I'm going to die in the process? I don't care. As long as I show, as I'm going out, I can show that really the thing, it's not as special as you thought. Yeah? The people that were straggling behind, the people that weren't able to keep up, people that weren't able to be with the collective level of the Jewish people, of the heights of the Jewish people, the people that were weak, that were roughly Yedea Min HaTorah. The people that were weak, Amalek was able to cut them off. Yeah? And to show, look, the Jewish people also have problems. Don't think that they're so special. That was Amalek's whole mission. His whole mission. And the way that there was a door opened for the potential of Amalek to come was this declaration of the Jewish people. This declaration, Hayesh Hashem Bekirbenu Im Ayin. Is God amongst us or not? You think about that for a minute, it's almost unbelievable. It's almost unbelievable how the Jewish people can make such a declaration. They just 5 seconds ago got out of the Yam Suf. They just 5 seconds ago saw God produce water from a rock. 5 seconds ago they saw the Slav descend from heaven on demand. How could they say such a thing? It's almost unbelievable. It's almost unfathomable. The Gemara in Chulin, on Daf Kuf Lamed Tes on the base. Haman min HaTorah minayon. Where do we see Haman first appear in the Torah? Says the Gemara. It says explicitly in the Pasuk, right? Everyone knows this, yeah? When Adam and Chava fall, whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it, and consume from the Eitz Hadas, and God asks them, Hamin HaEitz, from the tree that I told you not to eat from, did you eat from it? So someone reads this Gemara, and it's almost like a play on words. It's almost like a joke. It's like, really? That, I mean, you know, the first, okay, so it's the same three letters that form this man's name. But what? How is this an allusion, right? With the thing with Esther, which is in the same Gemara, right? A slightly more well-known Gemara that we mentioned last week. Esther min HaTorah minayin, Anochi Aster Astir Ponai B'yomahu. In the time of the exile, the Jewish people, they'll be under the servitude of foreign nations, and they'll be scattered amongst the exiles, and it'll be really bad, and God will cover his face. Right? So, like, that theme is understood. Like, that it was, in fact, the state of the Jewish people at that time of history. What is this Hamin HaEitz talking about? Rabosai, that term, Hamin HaEitz, God, this is God speaking, right? God turns to Adam, and he says, Hamin HaEitz, Asher Amar, right? From the tree, did you eat from this tree? I don't know. This term, Hamin HaEitz, is the first time in the Torah that we hear the shadow of any concept of doubt, of any concept of lack of clarity. The whole Bria is a progression of God creating the world, God giving commandments, God telling this to grow, God giving this instruction to Adam and Chava. Right? They're making declarations. They're making assertions. People are, right, all the dibros that are going on, all the exclamations that are said in the Torah until that point are very clear and straight to the point. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Adam and Chava and says, Hamin HaEitz, did you? This is the very first time in the Torah that we hear any expression of lack of clarity. As if God himself is expressing this doubt. This lack of clarity. Right? And as it, right, this is the source, by the way, of what many Svarim point out, that Amalek, right, Gematria Suffolk, right, Ayin Mem Lamed Kuf, is Gematria Suffolk. The Maharal, in his commentary on the Agada, or Chadash, says that this is indeed what the word Amalek means, right? Like the Pasuk in Yishayo, Nachash Aklaton, right? Yisrael Milashon Yashar, straight, right? There's a certain type of clarity with something that is straight and understandable and recognizable, where the Aklaton, the Nachash, is twisted and slithery. It's not clear. There's something crooked about it. Right? We describe something as dishonest or concealing or trying to obfuscate or to, right? We call it crooked. Why do you call it crooked? Because something is either straight and clear or it's crooked and intentionally hiding something. Essentially, it's right. It's intentionally trying to conceal something. Yeah.
This,
huh? This is Lashon HaMamalek. Correct. Correct. That is the right. The force that Amalek brings into the world is to place this undermining doubt on everything, on the entire Bria, right? To inject as the Nachash embodies this quality in the very very beginnings of Bereishis, because when the snake strikes, the person doesn't die right away. There's a poison that's injected into the person. And that poison slowly, slowly seeps through the body, slowly, slowly spreads around until it's completely undermined the entire structure of the body and the body can't support life anymore. And that's it. This doubt, this undermining doubt, is the poison that enters the soul and eventually it consumes someone until they have become the lates. They become the scoffer, the one who undermines everything. He seeks to undermine all value and all meaning and all significance. And he's willing to even die on a death mission in order to prove his point. Right? We say in the... What is the solution to this? How are we supposed to go about the proper approach to this poison that was injected into the world? And in Mamash, the first hours of Adam HaRishon having his divine consciousness, right? He eats from the Eitz Hadas and falls. You see in Tehillim Tzadi Vav. We have Tehillim over here? Tzadi Hei, rather, excuse me. Let us give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because God is a great king that surpasses all other powers. Because he is our God, and we are his nation that he is shepherding. He's shepherding us. Don't be hard-hearted like you were in Meriva. Remember Meriva, right? The Meriva, the incident that brings about Amalek, right? Don't have your heart hardened like you were in Meriva. Asher nisuni avoseichem, that they tested me. B'chanuni gam ra'u pa'ali. Even though they saw all of my wonders and all the things that I did for them in the Mitzrayim and on the Yansuf, they continue to test me. Meaning, what they did at Meriva. This is what they did at Meriva. Don't be like they were at Meriva. Don't do that. Arba'im shana kut bedor. I put up with these people for 40 years. Right? Ba'amarti amto elev avheim. And they're wayward of hearts. And therefore, nishbati ba'apim yivonim menuchasi. I had to tell them that they can never come to Eretz Yisrael. Because they continued that hardness of heart that they first expressed at Meriva, they took that forward. They took that forward and they didn't give it up. They couldn't transform their hearts. They weren't allowed to enter the land. And going back to the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar that we just read, you know, the beginnings of the Asera Nisyonos, the 10 tests that Klal Yisrael tested God, they began at Meriva. that pasuk from Bamidbar, right? Minisuoti ze eser peomim. Yeah, they tested me these 10 times. In Tehillim Kufvav, it gives a recap of this incident. The pasuk says, "Ma'asu be'eretz chemda." The Jewish people, they despised the beloved land. Lo he'eminu bidvaro. Lo he'eminu bidvaro. Ultimately, the thing that allowed all of this to transpire, all of the dysfunction that Amalek began and was continued throughout the entire Midbar experience, was because there was a disconnection with this quality that we call Emunah. This quality was lacking. Going back to Tzadi Hei for just a moment. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Tzadi Dalet. It tells that Yehoshua ben Levi met the Melech HaMashiach at the gates of Rome. And he asked him, Emosai Osimar, when is the Master going to come? And Mashiach responds, Hayom, today. I'm going to come today. Yehoshua ben Levi says, great, wonderful, happy to hear that. So he goes on his way, and lo and behold, the day comes to an end, and Mashiach doesn't come. So what do you do when you're Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and you get mixed messages from Mashiach? So you go to Eliyahu HaNavi, and you ask him, right? So this is indeed what he did. He went to Eliyahu HaNavi. He said, listen, I had a conversation with Mashiach. He said he was coming today, he didn't come. So Eliyahu says, what did he say? He said, Hayom. He said, I'm coming today. So Eliyahu said, no, he didn't mean Hayom today. He meant Hayom im bekolo tishmo. That's what he meant. The pasuk from Tehillim Tzadiyeh. Hayom im bekolo tishmo. If today you listen to my voice. What does that mean today if you listen to my voice? If today you listen to all of my mitzvahs and act perfectly and completely correct all of your blemishes and flaws? Is that what he meant? I don't think that's what it meant. Right? It doesn't mean, yeah, I'm coming today if you achieve this impossible standard that's absolutely impossible to achieve, then I'll come. That's not what it's saying. Hayom min b'kolo tushmo. The pasuk from Bamidbar. V'nisu oti ze eser pe'amim velo sham'u b'koli. They didn't listen to my voice. Says the pasuk in Tehillim, Hayom min b'kolo tushmo. If you decide right now to in fact listen to my voice, to not continue the pattern that was started by Amalek, right? If you decide to in fact listen to my voice, then immediately that's it. That's the end. You've achieved everything you need to achieve. What's the voice? What's the voice that needs to be heard? The voice that needs to be heard, Rabosa, this is what the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar is trying to tell us. Right? All of the nisim and niflos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed to the Jewish people. That was the voice of God. It was the voice. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to say? He's trying to say, listen, I'm taking you on a journey now. You're with me. You're not going to know everything that's going on, but look what I'm doing for you. I'm performing all these nisim and niflos in Mitzrayim. I'm splitting the sea for you. I'm producing food magically from the sky. I'm ensconcing you within the clouds of glory. I'm taking care of you. I know you don't know what's going on, but we're on a trip. And this is what's happening. That's the kol. The kol. That's the kol. And the refusal to listen to that kol is expressed in the nisyonos that Klal Yisrael give towards God. They test God. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu im ayin? Is God in our midst or not? That's the essence of all the nisyonos, of all the eser pe'amim, these 10 times, asher lo shamu b'koli, that the Jewish people did not listen to God's voice. They weren't able to hear that message. That message of, I'm taking you on a journey and you're with me now. That's the kol. That's the kol. And the 10 tests of the Jewish people in the Midbar were a rejection of that kol. And says Mashiach, if you decide right now to hear that kol, I'm coming. That's it. The moment that you hear that kol, that's the geula. Because that kol is the rejection of Amalek. It's the rejection of all that Amalek says. It's the rejection of the leitzanut, of the scoffing, the perpetual scoffing of Amalek. It's the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan for you. And that automatically opens the door to the Geula. That's the kol. Hayom im bakolo tishmo. Hayom. Hayom, right now. The experience of prophecy is called by the Nevi'im throughout the Tanakh. Devar merachok. It's called the thing that is far away. Merachok Hashem diberbi, for example, in the pasuk in Yirmiyo. Merachok, from afar. Where's the Zohar? Why is this described? Here we go. Why is this experience called something from afar? What's that? Dafim over here? Why did you bring this? Oh, this is a closet. Hold it one second. We'll find it. If you don't mind. Mechila for the everything's okay, we're all fine.
That's why I'm getting harder.
Why?
I'm just trying to get harder to figure out how to use them.
Everything's okay. Zohar Chadash Parshas Balak. Okay. Reading from the Zohar Chadash at the beginning of Parshas Balak. The Zohar quotes the pasuk from Yishayo, Perek Chaf Aleph. Adonai Elohai Ata. You are my strength, you are my power. Aromimcha, I will exalt you. Ovdeh Shimcha ki asisa fele, I will give thanks to you because you have performed wonders. Etzos merachok, counsel from afar, from far away. Emunah Omeid, you have carried through. Omein, as Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kasher Yisah HaOmein Es HaYonek. The word Emunah comes from this Lashon Omein, to carry a child. What does that mean, to carry a child? It doesn't just mean to hold the child in your arms and carry him from point A to point B. It means to ensure the growth and development of the child. That's what the Omein does. The Omein's job is to ensure the growth and development of the child. And Yishayahu is saying in this pasuk, from very far away, you brought the potentiality that was very, very far. You carried it through in the same way that someone carries a child into their full development and fruition. Olifna, says the Zohar, we learn, Haiman de Isar Balaila, someone who awakens at night. Bishata de Kucha Brichu Ol Beginta, that time HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes into the garden, the Ishtasha Betzadikaya, to delight in the righteous. He should recite this verse, Bereusa Deliba, with the full strength of his heart, Ulechavana Reusabe, and intend very strongly in it. This pasuk that we just quoted from Yishayo, it's in Perek Chafhei, by the way, not Chafalaf. I'm sorry. Ubatar Kain Yomar, and afterwards he should say, the pasuk in Tehillim, Odecha al kinoros nifleisi niflaim ma'asecha. How wondrous, wondrous are your actions. Venafshi yodas ma'od, my soul knows this deeply. This is the praise of the supernal chassidim, the supernal righteous, when they awaken in the middle of the night to give praise to Hashem. And after they sing this praise to Hashem, they throw themselves, they hurl themselves into the study of Torah. The concept of emunah. Right? Let's take a step back. We ask the question: how is it possible for the Jewish people in the experience of the Midbar, right? After they've just seen all of the miracles in Mitzrayim, after witnessing the whole experience of the Yam Suf, the Mun, and the Slav, and the Mayim, and the whole thing. The whole thing. How could they possibly make that declaration, Hayesh Hashem Bekirbeinu Imayim? How is it possible? It's almost unfathomable for us. They're literally, at the moment that they're saying that, the Anane HaKavod are surrounding them. At that very moment. Rabosai, the biggest, right? The poison of the Nachash, the poison of the Safek, the poison of Hamin Ha'etz, right? That doubt, what that says to a person is, in the simplest terms possible, if things are really going as they're supposed to be, why am I suffering? Why are things not perfect if things are how they're supposed to be? That's the Safek. That's the Safek of Amalek. Yes, Mitzrayim was great. The Yam Suf was good. That was a really cool trick. And the Slav was really nice. That was great. But what about now? Why is there no water? If things are really how they're supposed to be, then things should be perfect. Why aren't things going off without a hitch? Why isn't this a flawless experience? And that's how the Jewish people, you could say even Adaraba, the Jewish people who know what it means to live a supernatural experience. They know, because they just went through, you know, months, if not years of supernatural experiences, depending on how long the Mitzrayim experience was, right? But many, many months of experiencing one supernatural event after another. Those people know what God's hand looks like. So when they're confronted with the thing that doesn't look so perfect, those are people that can ask legitimately, is God really with us or not? Maybe not. If God was really with us, we wouldn't have a water problem right now. Water's a pretty basic necessity to deal with, right? If God could do the trick with the hail and the lightning and the splitting the sea, he can't give me a cup of water when I'm thirsty in the desert? That's the Hayesh Hashem Bekirbeinu Imayim. And what that essentially is, what the problem with that assertion, Rabosai, the problem with that is what are you saying? You're saying things should look how I think perfection is. I think that this is perfection, so why isn't it perfect? And the answer to that is, listen to my voice. My voice is that perfect is not what you think it is. I know what perfect is. Come, I'll show you. I'll show you what perfect is. But you have to come with me. You have to come. You have to walk through the midbar with me, and I'll show you what perfect is. If a person really thinks about this for just one moment, right? You're asserting that your current understanding of perfection is perfection. That's what you're asserting. Right? You're 20 years old, you're 30 years old, you're 40 years old. Yep, I know what perfect looks like. And if it's not that way, it means it's not good. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, no. Emunah Omein. There's something very, very far away that is being brought into being right now. That's what you're experiencing. And because you think that things are not how they should be, you know, you're going to tell me that things are wrong because they don't match with your utopian vision of reality? The authentic vision that a Ben Yisrael needs to approach the world with is this, the Shivcha de Tzadikaya, the eternal praise of the Hasidim at the time that God comes to be with them in Gan Eden, as he tried to come and be with Adam in Gan Eden, right? It says, God comes looking for Adam, he's walking through the garden, he's looking for him. And meanwhile, Adam is embarrassed and ashamed, hiding in the bushes. He's looking for Adam. Where'd you go? Ayeka, where'd you go? And there are tzaddikim in Gan Eden that are there. They're not hiding in the bushes. They're waiting for God to come. We have an appointment, right? He goes to meet those tzaddikim. And what do the tzaddikim say when they meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Eitzos merachok emunah omein. That's what you're doing, God. You are bringing into fruition these eitzot, this counsel, this deep, deep counsel, these plans, these strategies that you have. You're bringing them into being. That's what you're doing. That's the praise of these chassidim. And ultimately, that is the answer. That is the answer to the scoffing, to the leitzanut of Amalek. The leitzanut, the assertion of Amalek that tries to undermine everything, that tries to cast doubt on everything, that tries to cool everything down. He tries to cool down the water. The Jewish people are going out of Mitzrayim and they have all this momentum and they just exited the sea and they're on their way. Everything's going great. Just to cool them down just a little bit. I don't care if I die in the process. I don't care if it's not successful. But I just want to cool it down. Just cool it down. Just lower that enthusiasm a little bit. That's all he wants to do. And then once that fatal conceit, that's it. You've lost it. All right? That eventually leads to the next Nisayon and the next Nisayon until before you know it, you're listening to the Meraglim and you're being sentenced to 40 years in the Midbar. to listen to the voice, the kol of Hashem. The kol of Hashem is Eitzos Merachok Emuna Omein. And when the lates, when the scoffer confronts that midah, being lived for real, it shuts him down immediately. He just can't handle it. When Haman confronts Mordechai Yehudi, all of his wealth and all of his accomplishments and everything that he's attained is immediately nullified on the spot. Kol zeinenu shoveli. None of this means anything to me. Mordechai embodies this, right? He embodies the, as we're going to sing, the Shoshanas Yaakov. He embodies the full power of the collective Knesset Yisrael, right? That lives lehodia. He makes known shekol kovecha lo yevoshu v'lo yukomu lanetzach kol achosim. That's what Mordechai. He lives this. He doesn't just tell people about it. He lives it. And when Mordechai, right, when Mordechai is confronted by the Amalek, it immediately shuts him down. He can't handle it. He literally goes insane. And this is the goal. This is ultimately the macho emche es zecher Amalek. Zachor es asher asalacha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. He cooled you down. Karach abaderech. He cooled you down on the way. Don't let him do that. Don't let the Amalek in. Don't listen to the lates. Don't listen. Listen to me. Shema b'koli. Listen to my voice. Listen to what I'm telling you. And my voice is Eitzos Merachok Emunah Omein. Emunah Omein. And through this Avoda, a person can listen, can really, really be Yotze Yedei Chovaso of listening to the Megillah. With this consciousness, the person is Yotze Yedei Chovaso of listening to the Megillah. Lehodia. In the end of the day, it's Lehodia, to make known. Shekol Kovecha Lo Yevoshu. That all of those who live in constant yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, constant tikva for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Yevoshu, will not be ashamed. V'lo yukalmu lanetzach kol achasimba. And all those who yearn for him, will not be left aside. Mizrat Hashem. Chizku v'yam estavav chem kol miyachem l'Hashem.